time. This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go with some headlines. Mariners get a 4-1 victory over Kansas City with Marco Gonzalez throwing a complete game, getting his earned run average down from 409 to about 3.7. Big pitching performance, first complete game. It gives the bullpen a chance to rest. That's encouraging. The Mariners continue tonight. Of course, the big home run by Mike Zunino, about 450-plus feet. That was pretty good. So the Mariners have a chance to continue to make up ground. They picked up a game on the Astros. They're 2.5 games out of first place. A's won, Angels won, so they didn't gain any ground on them. But I think you can see there's a good distance and a good chance now that the Mariners can get some distance, particularly on a team like the Angels that have so many injuries. In football, plenty of news going on there. J.R. Sweezy let go by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the former Seahawk guard. He did not play the first year because of a back injury with Tampa Bay. Got injured late last season with a broken leg, and they just basically replaced him with a younger player that they drafted. So they're going young there on the Tampa Bay offensive line, particularly in the middle. Suspension for former Seahawk Robert Turbin for PEDs. He gets 4 games. Nigel Branum, the linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles, he gets a 1-game suspension. So those things going on. And as you know, Jameis Winston gets a 3-game suspension for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So that's our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And David, how are you on this kind of cloudy, chilly Saturday morning?
John, enjoying watching the best two soccer players in the world trying to keep their teams alive in the World Cup. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, that's good. Who's is still a scoreless tie, or?
No, you had one game. You had already France beat Argentina, so your favorite Lionel Messi is out. Then in about an hour, it'll be Portugal against Uruguay, and Cristiano Ronaldo, the best player in the world, will try and stay alive in his match.
So safe to say this is like the best day for the World Cup.
The best day is the championship day, but this is a really good day. It's the start of the one and out knockout round, and you happen to have some really good matchups today.
That sounds good. So get a chance to enjoy that. And of course, I guess enjoyable last night for the Mariners because they picked up a 4-1 win against a very bad Kansas City Royals team.
Yep, and that's what you're supposed to do, beat the bad teams, and the Mariners are doing that. They're about a 500 team, a little bit under 10-13 against the teams with a winning record and dominating those that have losing records. That's how you get to 20 games over 500. Best outing of the year for Marco Gonzalez, who needed it after a couple of really rough outings. He gave up 11 earned runs in his previous two starts. He was excellent last night. Kansas City has fallen off the face of the earth. I mean, this was a team that won the World Series a couple of years ago and had contended as recently as last year and still has some talent on their team. Their catcher, Perez, is good, and Mike Moustakas is good, but they just can't hit, and the Mariners took advantage of it big time last night.
No doubt. And because, again, I know that probably around this time last summer, you went to Kansas City for vacation, and you forecast that something like this was happening because three of their best players were at the end of their contracts. And you know, I mean, right. This was a team that drafted well. They drafted great hitters. And to try to develop the hitters, and they all kind of came due at the same time, and now they're paying the price. Kind of take us through what you saw last year and what you see last night.
Well, you knew they had the three-star players last year. Moustakas was one of them, and they wound up keeping him because of the real soft free agent market. Lorenzo Cain in the outfield, who is, I think, by the metric of WAR, wins over replacement, has been the best free agent acquisition of any player this year, and Eric Hosmer, who signed a 9-figure contract with the San Diego Padres, were the linchpins of a team that had had some success. That they're the ones who started the trend of building up a really great bullpen, and piece by piece lost those guys. There was no doubt that it was either last year was the chance to make the postseason one more time or trade some of those guys for prospects to rebuild. The Royals decided to roll the dice. Basically because I'm not sure what the reasons were, but I think the most significant reason was their fan base had come back out, had come to life. They, you know, when I went to the games last year, people were tailgating an hour before the game. They had, 35,000 in their stadium. It seats about 40. for a game against Minnesota on a Friday night in the middle of July. So their fans were coming out, and they decided to make one more run at it with the guys they had. And at that point, they were probably within a game or two of the wild card. Unfortunately for them, they fell apart at that point. And free agency expected to lose all three of their guys. We know the free agent market was slow. They were able to keep one of them in Moustakas. With Salvador Perez, a really good catcher, they felt like they had at least a core of guys, a couple of guys who could play, and then they have simply run into one of those years where they're not hitting, period. And it's one of those things where it's not about the manager. It wasn't necessarily about the plan. I mean, they certainly weren't going to be elite this year, but to be as bad as they are on path for 100 wins, you know, we talked about teams that are tanking and in the baseball parlance, and the Royals weren't one of them, but sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes the cards just don't go your way, and their offense is abysmal now, really, really unbelievably bad, and it was on display last night. Now, not to take anything away from Margo Gonzalez, who went the route, went 36 pitches and pitched a complete game, but Kansas City has been unable to hit, and they find themselves now in the hole that they kind of started off in. Remember, it was about a 30-year drought in Kansas City between World Series, and the playoffs was just about as long. And you're right, they drafted well. They made some wise moves. And, you know, along with drafting well, probably the most important thing is making trades for the right prospects and go no further than the Mariners to look at that. I mean, look, where would the Mariners be without Marco Gonzalez, for example, who won 8 games, who was, you know, picked up for a minor league deal with the Cardinals, or Mitch Haniger, who was certainly not the showcase part of the Gene Segura deal. Segura was the key guy. Haniger had a brief period of time in the majors, but, you know, has blossomed into a big-time player. Those are the key moves that you can make, taking other teams' prospects who have been developed to a degree and identifying which ones are good. And Kansas City did a great job of that. Greg Holland in their bullpen. They had a couple other really good bullpen pitchers, but it's all kind of come apart, which can happen in baseball. With the last two teams, it's sort of the same thing. I mean, the Orioles had the best record in the American League East, the best record in the American League East for 4 years running until the last month of last year when they were in the race and then lost 17 of 21 in September down the stretch and fell out of it. And that was just the harbinger of things to come. I mean, the Orioles have a big payroll, and they weren't trying to tank. They, in fact, were one of the teams that you figured were a part of the mix for the wild card this year. They certainly weren't as good as the Yankees, the Red Sox, but their bad luck continued, and they are now the worst team in baseball, despite their huge payroll. So, you know, it's the toughest thing to do is to build a good baseball team, especially with young players, because you never really know how they're going to turn out. And Kansas City and Baltimore are two cautionary tales of how it can really fall apart. And when you're not, you know, it's one thing to be expecting it and planning it and loading up with prospects. Another thing when it just happens and you weren't really anticipating it. In the case of both Baltimore and Kansas City, Baltimore for sure. I mean, they're looking at a complete teardown, including Buck Showalter moving on. Ned Yost won a World Series in Kansas City. In my opinion, he hasn't learned. It's not that he doesn't know how to manage anymore. He should be there for as long as he wants to be, but they got to do a complete rebuild there as well.
No doubt. What do you think baseball's problem is going to be in trying to stop the tanking prospect?
Well, I mean, I don't think that's the real problem. I mean, they don't have a lot of teams aren't doing that. It's just like I said, you know, it's just kind of playing out that way. This is not like the NBA where there's no reason to tank in baseball. There's no real advantage to having the first overall pick in the amateur draft. I mean, for every Steven Strasburg, there's Brian Taylor. You can completely miss in the baseball draft. And a lot of time, Mike Trout, 18 teams passed him over before he was selected. So, you know, it's not, you know, in basketball, you tank to get high draft picks to turn things around a little bit. In baseball, it doesn't work that way. So it's not the same thing as tanking. It's about controlling payroll a little bit and building up a farm system, and it has been successful in some cases. It's been unsuccessful in some cases. I mean, you've got to put the money that you're not spending on salaries has got to go into your farm system, because you have to develop these players. They don't just arrive ready made. And the baseball draft is such a completely, well, I mean, I'm struggling to find the right word. I mean, it's an absolute crapshoot for the most part. I mean, Mike Piazza was a Hall of Famer, was picked in the 55th round as a favorite of Tommy Lasorda. I mean, you don't have anything like that. In football, you know, if you quote-unquote tank, You're tanking to get a quarterback in the draft. You're tanking to get one of the top four or five picks. That just does not guarantee you anything in baseball. So it's not the same thing in baseball. I think baseball's bigger problem is the way it's being played right now. And this year is an outlier. I mean, you're not going to see years. I mean, look, it was supposed to be the same thing in the National League where, you know, what I mean is the American League, it was obvious the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Indians and the Astros were the class of the league, and there were a couple of other teams fighting for one playoff spot. And that's pretty much how it's played out, except that the fight has gone away, and it's just the Mariners locked in. That was supposed to be the exact same thing in the National League. I mean, the Nationals, the Cubs, the Dodgers were locked in. There was no one going to beat them, and neither one of those teams, none of those three teams, are leading their division at this point. So it's just more happenstance this year in the American League than the National League. I don't believe it's a real problem to build your organization up in that particular way. Again, because if you're using the literal definition of tanking, it's tanking to get a high draft pick, and that's no guarantee of anything in baseball. I mean, yep. There's 50 rounds in the draft, so you're going to get plenty of talent. You got to spend money on player development, and you got to be accurate in judging talent, or you're never going to be good, no matter how little money you spend or how much money you spend.
Yeah, that's why I think it's going to be a fascinating time because, you know, there was so many teams down, particularly in the American League, and attendance being down so significantly that, you know, the drama is going to be taken out. And I just wonder how ratings are going to go with this. Now, clearly, like you say, when you get to the playoffs, it's going to be fantastic. I mean, obviously, it's a great weekend with the Yankees and Boston playing each other. That's fantastic. But, you know, if, say, for example, the Mariners win, say, 4 out of 6 or 5 out of 6 against the Angels, the Angels are going to be all but done. And the drama may not be there if the A's start going because they now play pretty much 90% of their games against winning teams up until the All-Star break. And so they'll start to drop a little bit.
No, I mean, that's a completely unusual scenario. I mean, I can't ever recall it. And look, as you pointed out, and as I pointed out too, you've got the Yankees, the Red Sox battling all summer long. I mean, they are playing for first place. It matters, obviously, to not be in that wild card game. It's baseball's best rivalry. You've got a similar sort of scenario potentially playing out in the National League. With the Dodgers and the Giants. The Giants got Bumgarner back from injury. They're dealing with some stuff, but, you know, he is an elite player. So they've got their top markets playing well, playing real well. And remember, the Yankees, the Red Sox will play a ton of times in September. Now, there's no guarantee it'll still be a race by then. But the other thing about baseball, as we well know, and the Royals were probably the best proof of it, is when it comes to the postseason, all bets are off. All bets are off. It doesn't matter. If you won 116 games, as the Mariners quite painfully found out, being by far the best team during the regular season absolutely guarantees you nothing. Whereas, as we've talked about in the NBA, which is enjoying tremendous popularity, there's no drama whatsoever during the regular season. None at all. In fact, it doesn't matter if the Warriors have the best record or not. Like last year, it didn't matter if Cleveland had the best record or not. Everyone picked Warriors to play Cleveland in the finals. Before the year started, and that was the final. And it didn't matter that neither one of those teams had the best record. No one changed their picks. No one thought anything that would change. Now, Houston gave them a good run, but the Warriors still prevailed at the end of the day. And yet that doesn't make any difference because of the way they're marketing their players. So it's not so much about the races. It's about marketing. It's about promoting your superstars and getting buzz going. And baseball is suffering in that aspect. And I've heard people say, well, people are just getting their games, millennials, whatnot, are getting their games from other places. Well, I don't believe that's true in baseball. I believe that's true in football. But baseball is a very graying sport in terms of its fan base. And if they want to change that, if they feel it's necessary to change that, which I don't necessarily feel, because we're graying as a society, John, we're all getting older, we're all living longer, it'll be just fine. And baseball has been through worse scenarios than this, much worse. Over the decades and has bounced back just fine, which I'm sure we'll do in this particular circumstance as well.
Okay. Now, as far as just the Mariners themselves, I think one of the stories yesterday that was kind of leaking out was that, and I know I think John Morosi was like talking this week with Brock and Salk with the possibility of maybe the Mariners going after Cole Hamill. But here's the debate that I throw up because I mean, so much of the success of this team has been the managing of Scott Servais, the trades made by Jerry DePoto, and how they've put this team in a position where I think we both agree they're going to make the playoffs. But if they can't win the one game against the Yankees and Luis Severino, or the Red Sox and Chris Sale, then they're back and they're probably going to have a lesser record, because I go back to the 2012 Orioles, who won over 90 games, but they had a low run differential like this team does. This team has a 19 differential. The 2016 Texas Rangers, because they had a low one. The next year, you're going to drop down unless you improve the team. And so if I'm Jerry DePoto, I'm not trading for Cole Hamill on a short-term deal at $19 million, giving up a whole bunch of prospects. I'm trying to find that Marco Gonzalez type of trade, that Mike Leake type of trade. That's the one, because you want to have somebody that you can keep for not just 1 year, but for 2 or 3 years.
Well, John, we finally agree with each other on something. Because you're exactly right. I mean, look, if you're... Now, we'll see who the Red Sox and the Yankees will be able to pitch in that one-game playoff, because they may not have a chance to set up their rotation. But the Mariners, if they're in it, if they don't catch the Astros, which we don't think they will, and they still could, they're only 2.5 back. If the Mariners don't, they'll have a chance to set up their rotation. And even if you acquire a Cole Hamels, is he going to pitch that one game, or is James Paxton going to pitch that one game? It's probably James Paxton. You also run the risk of when you're going well, of ruining your chemistry. If you've got a need, it's a different story. It's a totally different story. But I agree with you. I think the Mariners, in terms of acquiring players, their attitude should be about guys that are more than just a quick fix, that are guys they can hang on to. Cole Hamels is exactly that. Now, they don't have a whole lot in their farm system, but they wouldn't have to give up a whole lot to get him because of what he's paid. Now, they're not paying him $19 million. They're paying him prorated whatever is left on his contract for the year, which would be about $4 or $5 million. And they don't have to pick up his player option for next year, but they have to pay him $6 million to not do it. So it's an expense, and it would be nice to have him in the rotation. But I agree. I think that they need to make some moves, or if they do make some moves, it should be with an eye of keeping guys. And we'll see if that'll be the case or not with Jerry DePoto. It's difficult to argue with the decisions he's made so far. So in DePoto, I'm pretty much trusting. But I agree with you. I think that any moves they make should be for long-term rather than short-term.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of like. I think Jerry tipped it off on Danny Dave and Moore on Thursday. What he tipped off was that, James Paxton has not really pitched more than like about 120, 130 innings or so. And I know that Gonzalez has not pitched that much. And so what they need and what they have the luxury of doing is extending the five-man rotation when things are going to be in pretty good shape and all but clinched in September and maybe even late August. So you pick up like the Gonzalez type, or you pick up somebody that you can have for a few years and then have them there, and then their options for the next season.
Well, and then things tend to take care of themselves as well, meaning that the trade deadline is in a month. It's basically in July, and we'll see. There are injuries that can still happen, and you may find yourself in need of a position player. You may find yourself in need of more relievers. So in baseball, with that long season and the amount of injuries that happen, those scenarios tend to take care of themselves. They don't exactly work out the way you normally want. But I wouldn't be opposed to a Cole Hamels. I just don't know that I think that's exactly what they need at this point.
No, I agree. And so what's on your schedule today?
Well, I'm going to watch the next soccer match, then Mariner baseball, and I'm looking forward to going out to the ballpark tomorrow.
Oh, that'll be fantastic. And so thank you so much, as always, and have yourself a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Sounds good, John.
That's Dave Grosby, Bob Gros, and Tom, 12 to 3 weekdays here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Kirkland. Hey, Rick.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
You were talking about holders and, punters being holders. I played football up to the semi-pro level for the Seattle Cavaliers, and we always used a receiver as a holder. And so what do you think about that? If this new punter beats John Ryan out, what about using a receiver as a holder?
It would kind of go against the grain in the NFL because, you don't want to, you don't know if he hasn't done it before, but on the teams that you played on, how easy was it to convert a receiver into doing that?
Well, it was pretty good because they've already got great hands.
Right.
And so that was the theory there.
Mm-hmm.
But and I've always wondered why the NFL always used a quarterback or and lately here it's been punters.
Right.
So what's the thought behind that?
Well, I think the thought behind it is that, and this is the mistake that I think that the owners are having right now, because they're still old school in the sense that they don't want to expand the 46-man roster. Okay, so now what happens is that you may only have four or five active receivers, and so if you get an injury, you may not have the luxury of, let's say, taking your sixth receiver and making him the holder. Now, if they would expand the rosters, I think that would really work. But, what you're trying to scramble around for special teams players, you're scrambling, because again, with the way the kickoffs are going to be now, you're not going to have the big offensive lineman or defensive lineman on the kickoff teams. That's just not going to happen. So you want those fast guys to be out there either trying to make tackles or make plays as a returner. And so I think what it comes down to is not spread too thin. And I think that's a lot of because of the 46-man roster. But I can see your point, because if you say you want to try to, if Michael Dixon is your best guy, you still need to develop an emergency guy, and that probably would be a wide receiver or would be the backup quarterback. So I think it's a valid suggestion yet you have, but my read on it is it's probably going into the problem that they have with the trying to take somebody who on the 46-man roster, because it's so precious as far as space.
Your point about the holder being injured, that always played into my thoughts as far as a punter. If John Ryan, let's say, was hurt on a place kick, then you don't have another kicker. You don't have another punter, at least for that game. So that always played into my feelings about that too.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great suggestion, but thank you for that one, because I had not thought about that. You've experienced it, and you've seen it, and you see it be successful. I think that could be an option, but I would think that their best thing, because the punter's only going to be out there, you hope, only 7-8 times a game or 5 times a game, and so he's only going to have 5 plays, and so it's easier. Because the one thing is, it's the practice time.
Yeah,
that's because you notice. I mean, the kickers and the punters and the long snappers. I mean, they've got hardly anything to do, and then to have them work, all through practice, you're taking a receiver away from practice.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's probably one of the reasons why they use the punter.
Yeah. Hey, Rick, thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
All right, 866-979-ESPN 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to David in Lacey. Hey, David.
Hello. Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
Hey, I feel like the Raiders are tainting their relationship with Khalil Mack by dragging out and signing him. I mean, this guy's a total professional, and he is a foundational pillar on their defense. What's holding up getting him signed?
Just the whole problem of trying to get long-term deals, because you have ego and strategy involved, particularly by the agent, because what you don't want to be is the first guy to sign and then you're topped by the next guy. And it's an arms race right now between Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald. It's also a problem trying to sign guys, because you notice it's harder each year because the prices keep going up for the players to be able to work it in the cap, be able to strategize and get things done. I mean, for example, the 2015 draft class is the class that is up right now. There's only 7 deals done, 7 that, because one, there's no deadline. 2, the strategy the player can use is like, hey, if you don't get the deal done, then I'm just going to take the franchise tag. So that's the, I'll get the franchise tag, which you don't necessarily want, but it's still for a lot of money. So it's just timing is everything. Ultimately the deals get done, but I don't think there's, any animosity. It's just hard to get deals done in the National Football League.
Is Mack asking for Von Miller type of money?
Yes. Probably more than that.
You think he's worth it?
Yes. Because, Von Miller type of money was a couple years ago, and these things get necessarily outdated. That's why the thought is the next contract by one of those two will be $20 million.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I would think if Mack would take $19.75 million, they'd sign it in a second. But he's angling for the 20, and probably rightfully so.
Yeah. Well, Aaron Donald's contract, he's still got, what, 18 and 19 he's under contract, right?
No, he's, so, I mean, he's making, what, $8 million this year, so.
Yeah, but he's under contract this year, right?
Right.
Already.
Yeah.
And I think he's under contract for 19 also.
Mm-hmm.
Mac will play on the franchise tag this year if they don't sign him, right?
That's correct. Because they're not going to let him go. He's too valuable.
Yeah, I want him at OTAs. I want him with the team. The Raiders, this is a building year. We just don't need the drama. Pay the guy, man. He's worth every cent of it.
Yeah, these things get done. It's just that, there is no deadline, and there's just strategy involved. Because it's not like you're seeing, when I went through, and one of the things I keep track of, because it really, I lean more toward, because you go back to the 50-year option guys that are, up, I think, next year, and there's only Blake Bortles and Mike Evans are the only guys that have signed.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think it was, Zach Martin. So there's three guys from that whole class of draft choices, first-round picks, so you only have three. And so when you're at that level, it's just slow.
Yeah. You think the Raiders got a chance to be competitive this year?
Competitive, yeah.
Building year.
The concern that I have is just some of the roster moves that they've made. They brought in 11 players that are 30 years old or older. Made some character gambles, one that may fail. We'll see if Martavius Bryant has a positive test that'll knock him out for a year. They gave him a third-round pick for him. So I think that it's a good team. It's going to be well-coached. There's no question about it. But we'll have to see how – I respect John Gruden, the coach. What I don't know is John Gruden, the general manager, because he has all the power to pick the players, and I don't know if he's done necessarily the best job there. That's going to have to be evaluated. Hey, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jeff in Owala. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Good morning, John. I'm out on the road walking for you again.
Oh, great.
A couple miles for you.
I appreciate that.
I love what the Mariners are doing this year. I mean, their highest-paid pitchers underperforming due to Father Time catching up, and their highest-paid player is trying to overperform through pharmaceuticals, and this team is hanging right in here. And I just look at this team as one of those kind of historically, this is what sometimes happens in sport. A team just coalesces together. They're all pulling on the same oar, and I can see this team get into the World Series. But to be honest, I don't view this team as it is constructed now as a team that has a lot of longevity to it in terms of this performance level.
And why would that be?
I just believe it's just everybody's, having their kind of like career years are blossoming, they're pulling together. Then the Bears back in the early 2000s have like a 13-3 year, then they just fell
15,
off
15
the table
and one,
after
I think.
That.
15-1, yeah. Well, to your point, there's one metric that it carries just about in every sport. I know it carries in football, and you carry it over to baseball, is that if you have a year where you win, you have a big net gain in one run wins, right? Or in the NFL, it would be one possession wins. You usually drop back the next year. If you have the advantage of an easy schedule, which, of course, it's not like that's a fault that the Mariners have. It's a success right now of the five teams because the AL is so bad. The five teams right now likely to make the playoffs. I mean, that's why the league's so bad with so many teams tanking or not doing well that it just pumps up your win. But then the next year, you're correct. You pay a price. And look closely. I know I said this a little earlier, at the 2-12 Baltimore Orioles and the 2-16 Texas Rangers. Much like the Mariners, like particularly the Rangers, they won so many. They set, I think, the record for one-run wins that they dropped from like 90s into the 78 the next year, where the Phillies, they dropped from like 92 to 86. So there is going to be a drop. But what I think the hope is, Because I agree with you. You know, that drops you still into a little bit of a wild card race next year. What they need to do is still add and try to build for 2 or 3 years. So if they can pick up another pitcher or two, much like Marco Gonzalez and also, you know, Mike Leake, that I think would be the better move than to overpay for a top-level $19 million pitcher that you may lose in a year.
Well, you know, I think, and I listened to Gross when he said, you know, the Mariners right now, their 40 years of bad luck is kind of washed away this one season. They're winning all these games, but, you know, you used to watch them, you go, well, they're going to lose this one, and they lose. Now they're winning them. So I'm riding with the flow. I'm on the wave. I've got my Mariners helmet night hat from about 77 ready to go to the playoffs. So, but like I said, I look at it, like you said, I kind of look at this as just a, unfortunately, I think this is an anomaly, and so we better ride it to the finish line.
Yeah, but the great part is because, I mean, you know what the likelihood is. I mean, they're going to face Chris Sale of Boston. They're going to face Luis Severino. These pitchers, they couldn't hit. And so you can see there's a good likelihood that they may not be able to win that playoff game, but the fact that they make the playoffs and the fact that, you know, they have the luxury that few teams have had is that they can not necessarily coast, but they can manage things because, you know, it's going to be a buyer's market. Because, you know, you got so many teams wanting to tank that they're going to give players away. I mean, look what happened in Detroit. I mean, that's a team that started tanking last year. You know, they gave Justin Verlander over to Houston, and he's the best pitcher in baseball right now.
Well,
and he was under
contract.
Well,
I remember Lou Piniello's mantra. He's always wanted that one more player that he never got. So let's hope that this year they, you know, can find someone that's going to fit in with this winning combination. We go all the way, John. God bless you.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. Fantastic. And I hope you and Mrs. Clayton are wonderful today.
We are wonderful today.
Beautiful. So we've been talking over the last several weeks about Phil Steele.
Mm-hmm.
And today, let's really get down to the nuts and bolts of it.
Okay.
He ranks the positions of college teams. He's got the Irish QB units 22, the running backs 22, defensive line 21. And this will be the strength of the Irish team this year, and that will be their defense. He has the linebackers at 13 and the defensive backs at 13.
Mm-hmm.
What's not mentioned, and I won't bother with it, is you've got second, third-team All-Americans scattered throughout the defense this year. You've got the number one first-team center in the country on the Irish offense. And the most important thing about Phil Steele's comments, the Irish are his number one surprise team.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he thinks very highly of them and that they just might you, Mr. Clayton, even though you're skeptical, be in the hunt for the national championship.
But, I mean, if you read Phil Steele, what team do they have ahead of them as the team that should be the fourth team in the championship playoffs?
Well, I'll be honest, I think he's made a mistake. And
oh, no, it's no. What team is that, Irish?
Yes.
What team?
You know, I just had a memory loss.
I'll remind you, if you're throwing Phil Steele at me, which, of course, I have the greatest respect. I mean, he is the most accurate preseason forecaster I think I've ever seen. He says it's Washington.
Washington
would be the fourth team.
But
does he not have Washington in every instance?
Let us not rule out the Fighting Irish as being his number one surprise team this year.
Right.
And that they could do very well.
But what if they lose to Michigan?
Just as the Huskies, who were in a conference, have a lot of problems ahead of them. Starting with their first game against Clemson.
But what about the first game for Notre Dame against Michigan? And you tout the five top 25 teams that they have to face. Are they going to win those games or lose those games?
They're
going to
win those games, Mr. Clayton.
Uh-huh.
The odds, the game that seems to be of most concern, not by me, but by many, is them going into Virginia Tech and playing there. That's the only one most people seem to be concerned about. They do not believe the Irish can't beat those teams, Florida State, Michigan, and Stanford, all highly ranked, USC, highly ranked.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the Irish way of playing football, Mr. Clayton.
Yeah.
They play the best. They don't hide in a conference.
No,
like
but
that,
they, that's what they should do is that, you know, play the best conference, get in the best conference. You notice they kind of broke away from the Big Ten, which, of course, they have tougher competition than the ACC. So did they really are they really trying to grab the toughest schedule? They do have a tough schedule. I'll go with you on that.
Oh, yes, they do. I would consider five top 25 teams. I don't know any other program that's playing five top 25 teams currently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no. The Irish always play the tough schedules. That's what makes them so attractive. When you can walk into a young man's home and say, first, you're going to get the greatest education in the world. Second, we're not afraid of anybody. We don't hide behind conferences. We play the tough games year in and year out. That's a great selling point, Mr. Clayton. Huh? And if I think I'm a hotshot kid dreaming of playing in the NFL, why would I want to go to an Alabama and get buried for 2 years on the fifth team? You know, the Alabama squad's 100 kids, Mr. Clayton.
Right. Well, we'll see. So Irish got a run.
Mr. Clayton, it's great. Thank you so much.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Larry in Yakima. Hey, Larry.
Hey, John. How's it going?
I'm doing good. Going good.
Good. Hey, I just wanted to call in about you've been talking a lot about Jimmy Garoppolo this week, you know, with the Jalen Ramsey comments and about him being a scheme guy. So I just want to call in and give a little balance to the Jimmy Garoppolo
sure.
narrative in the offseason, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead.
Okay, so talking about Garoppolo being a scheme guy, I'd just like to point out a couple of kind of startling statistics from their season last year. And first, to set the table with what he was working with, I know you've been bashing on their wide receiver group all spring and saying that their offensive line has questions. So he's working with a not great offense. Mm-hmm. His number one receiver, Pierre Garçon, was injured, didn't get him. So he's throwing to Marquise Goodwin, Lewis Murphy, Aldrick Robinson, and two rookie wide receivers, a rookie tight end, and one of the Celtics. I'm not even sure which one. So if it was the scheme, I'm wondering if these numbers would be so varied. In yards per drive, before Garoppolo, the Niners were 25th. After Garoppolo came in, they were number one. In points per drive, before Garoppolo, they were 29th. With Garoppolo, they were number one. Percentage of drives resulting in a score, I don't have the numbers for, Hoyer and Beathard combined were near the bottom. When Garoppolo came in, they were number one in that category. So their entire offense went from bottom quarter of the league to number one in those three categories. And I've seen a ton of statistics on their receivers, yards per route run.
Mm-hmm.
Goodwin's basically doubled under Garoppolo. Kittle's doubled. In fact, he had the second highest of all tight ends, yards per route run. If Jimmy would have qualified under QBR, he would have been the number one QBR for the season, and number nine in passer rating. So This will play out in the long run, but to hint that Jimmy Garoppolo is a scheme guy is probably a little too early for that, and I haven't heard that from anyone other than Jalen Ramsey, who got 44 points hung on them in the regular season. Mm-hmm. So by Jimmy Garoppolo. So,
but I think what that does, and again,
a little bit of a twisted narrative.
Yeah, the trade was fantastic. I mean, they got him for a steal, a second round pick. But understand, it's like Kyle Shanahan was not totally on board on that trade. Now, even though he finished the mini camp strong, he realizes the value of what they got in Garoppolo. Because remember, he wanted Kirk Cousins. There's no question. I mean, I just know that. And
they did. Yeah,
I still think getting Garoppolo may be the better move. But see, here's my rationale on the 49ers. I think in a lot of ways, everybody has jumped to too many conclusions. On their five game finish. I mean, they're thinking, okay, playoffs and all that stuff. I'm looking at the 49ers as next year's playoff team, not this year's playoff team. There's going to be a significant improvement. But I think what Jalen Ramsey may not be directly saying is that if you study Jimmy Garoppolo close, because remember, there was no pressure in those games, none. They were out of it.
That's a false narrative. I don't like that at all. No pressure. Come on. Every team gets to week 13 and half the teams are eliminated by then. How many teams go 1-10 and then finish 5-0 because there's no pressure on them? Has that ever been done in the history of the league?
Yeah, it's been done.
1-10?
Yeah, it's been done.
Well, I'd like you to look it up. You got a lot of access there, but it's very rare to go from 1-10 and then win your last five games because there's no pressure on you.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, well, it's, and again, the reason that they won the five is because he is that much of a better quarterback, and he has helped them. But I think what's happening now is that, they're saying if you study him, he's not going to be as good in that finish as he's going to be. He's still going to be good because, again, he's a very good quarterback. I mean, he was the next guy that was supposed to step up and be able to start. So that, I think, was good. The other aspect of it is that, they still have some holes, and to take the holes from where they were to make that jump is not the easiest thing in the world.
Well,
and again, I think the just like we can talk about the schedule for the Mariners being beneficiary, we can also say the same thing for the 49ers in that. I mean, Chicago was a bad football team. Beat them. Okay.
Well,
Houston was a bad football team.
Out of those five games they played, the week 17 was the Rams. You can write that one off because the Rams were already playing.
Right.
But they played those other four teams they played. Those three of those defenses finished in the top 13 in the league. Two of those were in the playoffs and fighting for playoff position. Houston was 8-5, looking at a wild card and looking at being eliminated if they didn't finish the season strong. Jacksonville is vying for top two seeding. You think those two teams didn't want to beat the hapless 49ers?
The two impressive wins were the Tennessee game in Jacksonville. Houston didn't have Deshaun Watson, and they finished with the offense with Tom Savage that was averaging 15 points a game. 15 points a game. Chicago was terrible on offense, and they took advantage of it.
Yeah, but you're talking about it, John. You're talking about a team that was 1-10.
Mm-hmm.
That had lost to everybody they had played except the Giants.
But it was 1-10 with a good quarterback.
Turnaround.
Yeah, it's a much better team. I've been working all week on trying to come up with some kind of win against replacement numbers on quarterbacks. And, obviously with the finish that Garoppolo have is a little bit too high. But if you would say that the average roster would be 6-10 and then you give it a running game for a win and a defense for another win, I still look at Garoppolo as maybe being worth about three wins, four wins. And so that is impressive. And so, when you put Garoppolo against Tom Savage, who's going to have the advantage? Garoppolo. If you put him against...
I don't know.
No, I'm saying that it's Garoppolo has the advantage.
It's just a scheme, though, right?
Well, no, remember, that's Jalen Ramsey. But what I'm looking into is what he's typically... Did you hear what Richard Sherman said?
You brought that up about 10 times during the week.
Yeah. But did you see what Richard Sherman did? Richard Sherman saw that he was tipping some passes.
Richard Sherman will tell you that all 32 quarterbacks have a tell.
Uh-huh.
Trust me. He'll have a tell on Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
That's no big deal. What do you think on one, from a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think Kyle Shanahan's level of concern is due to Jimmy Garoppolo's bad June that he had?
I think he probably has it at about a 6.
Really?
Yeah.
A 6?
Yeah.
His level of concern on Garoppolo is a 6.
No, you said the level of concern as he finished, it was a 6. Because he ripped the offense. He ripped Garoppolo. He ripped the, because it didn't fit. He credited the defense for being better, not the offense. Hey, great conversation, Larry. Got to run here. I got to go to Pat in Lacey. Hey, Pat.
Yeah, first-time caller, John. Enjoy your perspective.
Well,
shout out to the Seattle Seawolves in the playoff, the rugby team, inaugural season. What's your perspective on Major League Rugby here in the United States?
I wouldn't be surprised if it can succeed here. I know some rugby players in Denver, and it's doing well. I mean, that's going to slip under the radar, but I think this is a very diverse area for sports, and you know, if it can gain some momentum, that'll be great. Hey, got to run. Thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.